This is Day to Day. I'm Madeline Brand. Coming up, how the internet is changing life on the remote islands of Scotland's Outer Hebrides. But first, here in the U.S., the justices of the Supreme Court have been working together now for 10 years. That's longer than any other Supreme Court in more than a century. So you'd think that by now the Rehnquist Court would be fairly predictable and set in its ways. But the term that just ended last week shows that the justices still have the ability to surprise. And joining us to discuss the term is Slate and Day to Day's legal analyst, Dahlia Lithwick. Hi, Dahlia.
Hi, Madeline.
So what were the big themes of this term?
An interesting theme, I think, to this year that may not be a sort of big jurisprudential theme, but it's certainly of note, is that this was really, I think, ultimately a term about people. Usually in the last couple of years, you look back and you think, okay, there was some notion on trial, school vouchers, partial birth abortion. This was a really interesting term in that we actually had faces to go with these cases. We had Michael Newdow, the father who was challenging the pledge. We had Josh Davey, a student in Washington State, who was challenging the state's right to take away a scholarship when he wanted to use it to study religion. And very prominently, we had the vice president, Dick Cheney, and I think the face that we really will think about this term is the face of the president, George Bush. And so instead of just having these sort of abstractions decided by the court, I think what we're going to look back in this term is one that really involved very real people, real conflicts, and real rights. And that's interesting and I think noteworthy.
In a lot of cases, you have a 5-4 split. I'm wondering if in this term you had any major shifts among the nine justices.
We are. We're seeing a sort of very slow but definite shift. The court is not splitting on the traditional 5-4 left-right lines the way it used to. We still have a lot of 5-4 cases, but more and more we're seeing a shift away from strict ideological positions and a shift of power to this sort of strange cross-ideological coalition that's notably formed by Justice Sandra Day O'Connor and Justice Stephen Breyer. They've been variously described, including in last week's Slate discussion, as the pragmatists, as the realists. These are the people who sort of are not thinking in terms of right-left politics. They're thinking in terms of how do we just get this issue resolved? Let's roll up our sleeves and do it. Let's sort of take a step back from doctrines, take a step back from legalism, and think in terms of getting this problem solved. And we saw that sort of strain of thinking more and more prevalent over the term. That sort of strange bedfellows of O'Connor and Breyer has been foreshadowed the last couple of years, but they seem now to really be in lockstep on some major cases. And I think next year it's going to prove even more, an even more solid coalition.
And one surprising coalition between Antonin Scalia and Justice Stevens.
That's right. I mean, that was a good example of cutting completely across ideological lines in one of the enemy combatants cases where arguably the most conservative and certainly the most liberal justices on the court both said that the president, unless he is going to suspend the right of habeas corpus, cannot hold Yasser Essam Hamdi indefinitely in detention. So I think it is true that the sort of Bush v. Gore 5-4 that we all have locked in our brains is slowly being eroded by the court.
Now, what about the role of Chief Justice William Rehnquist? Has he the same power over this court as he had in the past?
There was an interesting insight by Linda Greenhouse in the New York Times this weekend that suggested that this was the year that Chief Justice Rehnquist really lost control of his court. There is some real truth to the notion that there were always three big hallmarks of the Rehnquist revolution, what was called the sort of massive watershed change that he made as the Chief Justice. One of them was the rebirth of federalism, the notion of states' rights. Another was the slow, inexorable tearing down of that quote-unquote wall between church and state. And the third was an erosion in the rights of criminal defendants that had been granted initially by the Warren Court, and a reversal of that. And certainly I think that the first two were markedly diminished this year. There's no question that on the federalism case, the big federalism case this year, Tennessee v. Lane, which had to do with state immunity, the court voted against the Rehnquist position. I think that third theme of the Rehnquist revolution, the erosion of the rights of criminal defendants, does continue, although this year we did see a case in which when the police egregiously violate Miranda rights, the court actually stopped them. But I think it is true, and I think that this is no longer the Rehnquist court in capital R and C the way it was a few years ago.
Opinion and analysis from Dahlia Lithwick, who writes the jurisprudence column for Slate. Thanks a lot, Dahlia.
Always a pleasure, Madeline.